Here we are with David Hawkings, a brilliant editor of the American Leader and formerly worked at the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. He knows it all, and we go to him to give us the background on what's going on in the Congress and the government. And so let me start with this question. Here, closer to home, we have the surprise retirement of moderate New York Republican Congressman John Katko. Do you have any sense of what that was about?
I have some sense, and it's a sad story. It's a sad reflection on the state of the ridiculously sorry state of Congress and American politics. John Katko was a little bit of a political unicorn, as his constituents and residents of upstate New York probably understand. A genuine moderate at a time when there are almost no genuine moderates left. Somebody who got crosswise with Donald Trump several times, most importantly when he was one of the 10 Republicans who voted for impeachment. He faces re-election in a district he doesn't even know yet what it's going to look like, because the redrawing of congressional boundaries in New York is not finished. And everybody says, well, geez, why would John Katko retire now? He's on the cusp of becoming the chairman of an important congressional committee next year, the Homeland Security Committee, on the assumption that the Republicans will win control of the House, which is a pretty safe assumption. I think that is an ignorant guess, because even if John Katko spent a ton of money to win re-election in what would probably be a difficult election for him, his fellow Republicans can't stand him, and Donald Trump can't stand him, and the odds that he would be, even after doing all that work, that he'd actually end up as the chairman of this committee, I think, are pretty small. The Republicans would not let somebody who voted for impeachment be chairman of a prominent committee.
It's interesting because you mentioned in passing here the question of reapportionment, and Katko's name has come up from time to time as one who would be targeted. Can you tell us about that?
Well, right. So New York is, just to do this in one sentence, the country, the House seats are reapportioned among the states once a decade based on population growth. New York is continuing its half-century-long trend of losing at least one congressional district each decade. At the same time, the idea of a less partisan process to draw these congressional lines has fallen apart in New York. It now looks highly likely that the Democratic legislature will be able to draw the maps to its liking. And they could do that in such a way they think that could pick up, three, four seats. You probably know this better than I do. And so game of musical chairs could victimize Katko. Katko could be put in a district against another Republican. That means he could face a primary against another Republican, where this whole Trump loyalty thing would be the whole race, probably. Or he could be put up against a Democrat in a district that would be tough for him. And these kinds of questions are going around, all over the state. And maybe we'll get into this. Does Elise Stefanik, rising star in the Republican leadership, do the Democrats make life politically miserable for her by the district that they draw?
I don't think they're going to do that. This is me living up here and not being a particular fan of Ms. Stefanik. But I think there, the traditional gerrymander idea is throw all the Republicans into one district. Next door is Claudia Tenney. And there's a question as to what the Democrats are going to do to her.
Right. I thought one of the ideas was you make Claudia Tenney run against Elise Stefanik.
And she loses. There's no question about that. But this reapportionment process is going on, obviously, in every state has to. You take the census, then you find out how many congressmen you're going to have. And New York State, disgracefully, because 80 people didn't answer their doorbells.
Right. It's amazing, right? I think that's an undercovered story that this was. It was all this talk for years and years about how important it is to fill out the census. It really matters as to your representation, and New York came up with, it was like 80 people short of being able to hold on to a congressional district.
So what is that?
What is it,
David Hawkings? Is it that people just have no idea what this all means?
I think there's that. I think they don't understand the importance of it, that it's not just, well, they think, who the hell needs another member of Congress from New York anyway? Congress stinks. Who needs more congressmen? They make that kind of glib judgment. They don't understand that it's not just members of Congress that the census decides. It is billions of dollars in federal aid every year to the states is apportioned based on the census counts. These are hugely, hugely important things that the public is not sold on, and that the public has such a disdainful view of government generally, that and a disdainful view of personal of the notion that Big Brother is out to watch them, that their privacy isn't really private, that this information will fall into the wrong hands, will be used against them. The world of conspiracy theory. They're just like, I'm not cooperating. I'm not giving I already give the federal government my money reluctantly once a year. I'm not telling them who I am any more than that.
Interesting. So let's jump to another big word. You can't turn on a television or radio station without hearing the word filibuster. Howdy Doody used to have a character called Phil E. Buster, but that's another whole story. So tell me about what the thinking is on the filibuster lately.
It's Dutch, you know, by the way, but we're not going to go down that road.
Oh, interesting.
But it's a New York story. Because it's Dutch. Yeah, it has something to do with sails and sailing. So this the filibuster, right, that in it didn't used to be this way, and it's more tradition than rule, and those who talk about this being some sort of ironclad, the Senate has always been this way, hokum that it has always required 3 out of every 5 senators to vote to pass a bill, that's not true. But it is the modern, it has been the modern tradition that has become increasingly abused by the minority that they object to virtually everything. It used to be once in a great while, issues of major importance, big deal bills, big major policy changes. Now, in recent years, it has become the power of the minority party has used it to make the majority party come up with 60 votes for almost anything.
What's interesting to me is that if the Republicans take both the House and the Senate, and we've done away with the filibuster, then they're going to be empowered, aren't they?
They would be, and that's the countervailing view: is you're going to change all the rules to benefit the Democrats for 6 or 8 or 10 months. And then the Republicans are going to be in charge, and look what they'll do with this power. That's a powerful argument. The question is, what proactively do the Republicans want to do legislatively that they could get away with? How would they use this power? And I think there's some argument to be made that there's a relatively short list of legislation the Republicans would want to cram through over the Democrats' opposition. But I probably haven't thought like a Republican enough.
But you have thought well. And David Hawkins, thank you for being with us for this. You are so right that there's a lot to look into here and to think, anticipate, in case the filibuster is abolished. We know one thing. The Republicans right now don't want that to happen. And maybe that's because they know that legislation would get passed that they don't want. David Hawkins, thank you so much for being with us. When we come back the next time, let's talk about Manchin and Sinema.
Sounds good.